The FAA imposes new requirements on pilots of the MU-2. Quest delivers its first Kodiak. And the Beechcraft King Air C90 GTI earns its certificate. This is Aero News. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for downloading this AeroCast. Here's what's up in aviation for Tuesday, January 29th, 2008. The Federal Aviation Administration is moving forward with more stringent training requirements for pilots of Mitsubishi's MU-2 series twin turboprop, following a rising accident rate in the U.S. The MU-2, which went out of production in 1986, became popular on the used aircraft market for its high performance and low cost. The unique demands of flying the plane in slow flight, or in an engine failure, have sometimes been too much for pilots lacking experience in type, as the declining safety record eroded the MU-2's resale value over time. More inexperienced pilots wound up flying the plane. The FAA has listened to calls from both the manufacturer and its critics, who have called for remedies ranging from more structured training in type to a full-on type rating requirement. Based on response to its notice of proposed rulemaking, FAA has stopped short of requiring a type rating, but will give MU-2 pilots 1 year to comply with a new special federal aviation regulation. The SFAR mandates a comprehensive standardized pilot training program, use of a standardized cockpit checklist and the latest revision of the airplane flight manual, and a working autopilot except in certain limited circumstances. The full 216-page report, including proposed graphics to aid pilots in emergency situations, is now available from a link in the print version of this story on our website at aero-news.net. Quest Aircraft Company was formed in 2001 to develop an aircraft made to order for foreign missionary groups and anyone else who needed to get big loads on and off unimproved fields or waterways. On Friday of last week, the vision came to fruition with the first customer delivery of a Kodiak turboprop. At a presentation Friday at Quest's factory at Sandpoint, Idaho, Spirit Air co-owners Joanne Walters and Dan Schroeder took delivery, marking Quest's arrival as a full-fledged plane maker. The Kodiak earned its FAA type certificate on May 30th last year. Quest says it continues to work with the FAA to achieve a production certificate, which would allow it to more quickly address a now 3-year delivery backlog. The all-aluminum Kodiak is capable of working off floats without structural upgrades and can land on unimproved surfaces. The plane comes with a Garmin G1000 panel, takes off in under 700 feet with a useful load of 3,325 pounds, and climbs at over 1,700 feet per minute. Hawker Beechcraft Corporation announced on Monday the certification by the FAA of the new Beechcraft King Air C90 GTI, the latest evolution of the popular twin-turbine Beechcraft King Air 90 series. The C90 GTI replaces the C90 GT in the lineup. The plane features Collins ProLine 21 avionics, like its bigger siblings, offering what the company calls the lowest-priced twin-turbine aircraft with mid-size jet avionics. The company notes the C90 GTI features a cabin 50% larger than most VLJs, allowing it to seat up to 7. It also includes an in-flight accessible, heated, pressurized baggage storage area, plus a standard private aft lavatory. The Federal Aviation Administration has completed its second look at a recent runway incursion at San Diego's Lindbergh Field and placed the blame on a mistake by an air traffic controller. As ANN reported, on January 16th about 6 p.m., a Hawker Siddeley corporate jet had just landed and was preparing to taxi clear of the airport's only runway, but a brief mechanical issue required it to stop, still on the runway. The controller didn't immediately notice the stop and cleared Southwest Flight 1626 for takeoff. FAA spokesman Ian Greger says the 737 came within 2,500 feet of the Hawker. That's 500 feet closer than previously acknowledged. Greger told the San Diego Union-Tribune last week that, despite the fact that the smaller jet essentially eliminated part of the runway's safety margin for the departing 737, the FAA did not consider the incident a safety breach. The union accused the agency of a cover-up. Both the FAA and the union have described the controller, who was not identified, as a longtime employee with a good safety record. Up next on ANN, DOT says airline delays are becoming a burden on the U.S. economy. Chicago O'Hare holds on to two distinctions it wishes it could lose. And U.S. airlines say recession What recession? You're listening to Aero News.
Do you think the only time your certified airplane can be equipped with a full emergency airframe parachute recovery system is when it rolls off the production line? Well, think again. BRS is the aftermarket leader in providing full airframe recovery parachutes for certified airplanes like yours. We manufacture the reliable parachute systems you need for a full range of aircraft, including Cessna. For your own safety and for that of your family members and loved ones, get the extra life assurance of a BRS airframe recovery parachute. In the event of an emergency, you'll never question the security of having one final option. Call BRS at 651-457-8651 or visit us online at brsparachutes.com.
We're back with more of your Aero Briefing for January 29th, 2008. On the web, you can find us at www.aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. In her speech to the Washington Aero Club last Tuesday, U.S. Transportation Secretary Mary Peters discussed airline delays and noted that even when flights are on time, the need to plan for delays has itself become detrimental to productivity. DOT's Bureau of Transportation Statistics says that in the first 11 months of 2007, 1.6 million passenger flights were delayed by 15 minutes or more, totaling 170 passenger years. That's up from 98 years lost in 2003. The DOT pegs the monetary costs of those delays at $15 billion. But that estimate does not include time lost by flyers stranded for hours at airports after delays forced them to miss connections, required early arrivals at airports, waits in security lines and baggage claim areas, and airline sandbagging of estimated flight times to allow reporting on time arrivals. DOT statistics show total passenger days lost to airline delays just in the first 11 months of 2007 were 3,475 for Hartsfield-Jackson Atlanta International, 4,619 at Chicago O'Hare, and 4,897 days total at the three Washington, D.C. airports. Among DOT's other statistics, Chicago O'Hare International held on to two distinctions it would have preferred to lose. Of the nation's 32 busiest airports, O'Hare was dead last in on-time performance and led the nation in canceled flights. According to research by the Chicago Tribune, nearly 4 of every 100 flights from O'Hare were canceled in 2007. The horrible record at O'Hare cannot be blamed just on volume. The world's busiest airport, Hartsfield-Jackson Atlanta International, saw fewer than 6,200 flight cancellations for the first 11 months of 2007. That was less than half of O'Hare's 13,434. And it's not just weather either. While Midway is separated from O'Hare by only 14 miles and has similar weather, it saw only 1% of its flights canceled in 2007 to almost 4% for O'Hare. The Tribune's analysis found that one big advantage Midway has over O'Hare is Southwest Airlines, which has the best on-time record of the major carriers, is less reliant on hub cities in its routings, and has a strong presence at Midway. Southwest is also free of the labor unrest which plagues some competitors. Based on the paper's research and numbers from the Department of Transportation, it appears a reasonable strategy for minimizing risks of later canceled flights would be to fly from smaller airports on carriers at peace with their unions, choosing routes which stay clear of the New York metro area and avoiding regional jets. The news is full of dire economic predictions, but so far, the airlines say there's no recession in their industry. The Dallas Morning News cites airline sources in reporting that fourth quarter losses announced last week were blamed primarily on higher fuel prices, not a snowballing economic crisis. Continental CEO Larry Kellner told investors on January 17th, quote, "We're watching our future bookings closely and do not see a slowdown based on our current booking levels," unquote. U.S. Airways Group President Scott Kirby noted, quote, "It's hard to find any concrete evidence of a booking slowdown, and fundamental trends for U.S. Airways and the industry at large remain robust," unquote. Tom Horton, chief financial officer for American Airlines parent AMR Corp., said American has seen its booked load factors for the first part of 2008 increase by 0.8%. Southwest Airlines CEO Gary Kelly said the industry, unlike its behavior in some previous economic cycles, has been out in front of the next recession. Quote, "The airline industry has anticipated this economic environment better this time than ever before, because you've already seen airlines shrink and cut their capacity," unquote. Kelly qualified his optimism by noting that airline bookings are a lagging, not leading, economic indicator. There's good news for aviation's military sector. A number of analysts say they expect the nation's largest defense firms to weather an expected economic downturn in the year ahead. Lockheed Martin CFO Bruce L. Tanner told the Associated Press, quote, "We are about as far removed from the credit risk and those sorts of matters as you can imagine. We feel sort of insulated," unquote. Lockheed posted a 10% increase to its fourth quarter profits in 2007. General Dynamics posted a 42% increase, due largely to its military products, though the company also noted its Gulfstream unit hasn't seen any shortfalls yet in private jet orders. Northrop Grumman earnings remained flat in the quarter, but that comes off a record year for quarterly revenue and forecast growth. JSA research analyst Paul Nisbet said of the defense industry, quote, "It is a pillar of stability compared to the turbulent markets in other industries," unquote. Then again, most industries aren't fighting a war on fronts in Iraq and Afghanistan. Still ahead, a Tampa GA airport seeks to calm frightened NIMBYs. Guns continue making it through heightened Orlando airport security. And here's a chance to fly to the Bahamas for a good cause. You're listening to Aero News.
At Cirrus Design, we don't ignore the fundamentals of aviation design. We give them an ingenious new interpretation. The Cirrus SR20 GTS. Go ahead, indulge yourself. The SR20 GTS provides entry-level luxury into the world of Cirrus, yet at a price that makes indulgence affordable. When friends, family, and business associates experience the versatility, freedom, and sheer fun of flying in your Cirrus, they'll see that it maximizes the most precious commodity of all, time. To learn more, call 888-750-9922. Or check us out on the web at cirrusdesign.com.
Finally, aviation headsets have evolved. Clarity Aloft is the next generation of headset design. One reason that they can say that is because of Clarity Aloft's flexible boom arm. This featherweight band is the same one sported by stage musicians and performers the world over. Balance and comfort are the result of its elegantly simple design. The mic boom is easily repositioned for eating and drinking during flight without disturbing your earpieces. For more information, call 612-747-3197 or check out the innovative Clarity Aloft headset on the web at clarityaloft.com.
We're back to wrap up your Aero Briefing for Tuesday, January 29, 2008. I'm Paul Plack. Starting with its opening in 1935, Peter O. Knight Airport in Florida was the Tampa Bay's principal commercial airport, served by both Eastern and National Airlines until both relocated to Tampa International in 1946. Today, a plan by the Hillsborough County Aviation Authority to move the airport's runway 321 to the south by 175 feet is leading to NIMBY concerns that the authority is courting a return of bigger planes. Lewis E. Miller, executive director of the authority, wrote an open letter to the public in Monday's Tampa Tribune. He stresses runway changes are intended solely to create a federally mandated safety area for runway 321. Quote, "These changes will not increase the airport's capacity or ability to serve larger aircraft. Our plan also calls for constructing new hangars that will be sized to accommodate existing users of Peter O. Knight Airport, not to increase the activity or size of aircraft at the airport," unquote. Miller closed his letter with a promise to always consider the impacts of any proposed development on the community. Traveling through airports these days, it's hard not to wonder, are all these lines, expensive high-tech equipment, and shampoo confiscations really making us safer? The Orlando Sentinel quotes officials at Orlando International Airport in reporting that despite elaborate and expensive measures implemented after a gun and drug running operation was exposed at Orlando, gun smuggling through Orlando remains a problem at the airport. The Greater Orlando Aviation Authority spent $5 million on security upgrades after last year's incident in which airport workers were involved in a scheme to smuggle guns to Puerto Rico. The case triggered a requirement that all employees entering secure areas be screened every time they enter, 24 hours a day. Five mobile X-ray machines will be brought online sometime this year, dedicated to screening items carried in by employees. Still, Orlando Police Chief Val Demings says the problem has not been solved. If Orlando is one of only two airports required to screen arriving employees 24/7, what about the 400 other commercial airports in the U.S. with looser requirements? Charles Slepian, an aviation security consultant in New York City, made this sobering observation to the Sentinel. Quote, keep in mind the story just last week about the cat that jumped in someone's suitcase and made it through security. I suggest a live animal is much easier to recognize than guns and explosives, unquote. One of CFI Bob Miller's 10 suggestions for ANN listeners recently to increase proficiency in 2008 was to make a long flight somewhere. Put a pin in the map, plan it, fly it. Now, Premier Aircraft Sales of Fort Lauderdale, Florida, is coordinating a great opportunity to fly to the Bahamas for a good cause. The Bahamas Habitat Fly-In and Help-Out will be a group mission to get pilots to the Bahamas to help residents there rebuild from the destruction of recent hurricanes. The humanitarian fleet will depart Premier's headquarters at Fort Lauderdale Executive Airport after a luncheon hosted by the company on Thursday, March 6th, and will arrive at Governor's Harbor Airport as the port of entry into the Bahamas. The return trip will be made on Saturday the 9th. Because the Bahamas Habitat Aviation Committee is a nonprofit Christian relief mission, the flight and expenses are tax-deductible for pilots and participants. Find out more from the link at the bottom of the print version of this story on our website at aero-news.net. And finally, the Airbus A380 has been called the whale jet for its unusual profile. But another Airbus plane may be taking over the nickname. The Australian government has deployed an Airbus A319 equipped with special electronic surveillance equipment to keep an eye on two Japanese fishing trawlers suspected of conducting whaling in the Antarctic. The plane flew a six-hour mission on Sunday, and while weather kept it from reaching its intended destination area, the plane is credited, along with other measures, with preventing the taking of any whales in the area. Greenpeace and the conservation group Sea Shepherd also have vessels shadowing the Japanese ships to prevent the killing of whales from happening in secret. The controversy has escalated to a Cold War-style spy game in the chilly waters of the Antarctic. Greenpeace Whales campaign coordinator Sarah Holden is happy so far with the campaign's progress, measurable so far only by what has not happened. Quote, the fact that we are in day 10 without any whales being taken is fantastic. We suspect that the orders from Tokyo are for nobody to see them whaling. This is a delicate time for them politically, unquote. That's the latest from Aero News. Remember to check out the ANN special feature. Today, my guest is Andy Sabula, Executive VP for Government Affairs at the Aircraft Owners and Pilots Association. We'll talk about AOPA's stands against congestion pricing at airports and the use taxes being levied by states against aircraft owners. And if you haven't done so yet, subscribe to our AeroCasts. Find them on iTunes, Yahoo, Odeo, and our website, www.aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.